Yeah, sure.
Everybody has a handout. So the goal is to speak about different subjects that relate to our work at the Beis Din in adjudicating cases, and to go into some of the lumdus of the related sugyas and some of the actual shilos that confront the Beis Din in the modern age. So I thought that I would begin with the procedural questions that come into the Beis Din regarding Beis Din jurisdiction. What are matters that are within Beis Din jurisdiction, outside of Beis Din jurisdiction? What types of contractual provisions are parties allowed to stipulate when it comes to adjudicating their cases in Beis Din or in arbitration or in civil court? And what are the parameters of what is permissible, what is impermissible, what is obligatory when it comes just to the litigation of cases and the settling of disputes? So what I presented here are eight case scenarios of different questions that have actually come in front of the Beis Din. The names are fictitious, but otherwise these are real-life questions that have come into the Beis Din. And to take you through some of the sugyas so that we understand the conceptual background of thinking through the answers to these different questions. So just to give a basic summary, the starting point when we deal with cases in front of Beis Din is, of course, Choshen Mishpat, the four chalakim, Shulchan Aruch. The sections that people focus upon the most are probably Orach Chaim, laws of day-to-day life, and Yoredeya, laws of Kashrus, and Avelus, and Nida, and things of that sort. Less so Eben Ezer, which is more within the realm of what rabbis need to know, how to perform weddings, how to perform Gittin. That's more in the realm, again, of Beis Din practice. And then Choshen Mishpat. Choshen Mishpat is the codification of Jewish civil law, of tort damages, of property damages, of relationships between neighbors, between partners, and obligations of Shomrim, and Yerusha. All of these things are in Choshen Mishpat. Choshen Mishpat starts out with the laws of what are the Batei Din, the Dayanim, supposed to do? How do the Dayanim conduct themselves? As well as laws of Edim, how do Edim proffer their testimony in Beis Din? So the starting point of Choshen Mishpat itself is the obligation on the one hand to establish Batei Din, and that is derived from Shoftim and Shoshim Titen Lecha V'chol She'arecha, right? Pasuk at the beginning of Parsha Shoftim. And it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, in Daf Tezayin and Mebeis, that says that we learn from this Pasuk that there's an obligation in every single city you're supposed to set up a Beis Din. On the other side of the spectrum, there is a negative prohibition. The negative prohibition is Be'ila Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifnehem, Lifnehem Lo Lifnei Akum. That when you have cases that need to be adjudicated, monetary cases, they have to be presented lifneihem, in front of the Jewish law judges, below lifnei akum, and not in front of the civil courts. This is an actual prohibition. So much of the territory that needs to be navigated with respect to these questions is the territory between what is absolutely prohibited in terms of what you're not allowed to bring to civil court, and when do you have to bring a case to Beis Din. But there's a big difference between these two poles, because one pole is a real negative transgression. If somebody should go to civil court, then they have transgressed this prohibition of Eila Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifneihem, below Lifneiakum, that they've gone in front of the civil courts. On the other hand, as I tell people, there is no affirmative obligation to appear before Beis Din. You can go through your entire life without once stepping foot in Beis Din, and you have not violated anything, and you have not failed to fulfill a positive commandment. The positive commandment simply is that you should set up rabbinical courts, so the rabbinical courts should be available in the event that there is any dispute. But if parties have a dispute, we don't have a halacha that you must litigate. If you settle all of your disputes amicably between yourselves, that's considered to be a mitzvah gedola. The Gemara says, gadol ha-shalom, that shalom is considered to be the highest value, the highest priority. There is no mitzvah that you must go to Beis Din. The mitzvah is, if you litigate, you have to litigate in front of a Beis Din and not in front of a civil court. So the Ramban says something very interesting, and this is in the very first source. On this pasuk of Eila Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifneihem, so the Ramban points out that there is a distinction between this halakha and most of the other halakhas that are in the monetary realm. When it comes to monetary laws of the Torah, for example, that a shomer sachar, a paid bailman, has to be responsible if the item that is entrusted to him or her is stolen or lost. So let's say that I'm a shomer sachar, and I say to the person who deposited the item with me, I say, you know, normally, according to the Torah law, I'd have to be liable for Gneva Vaveda. I don't want to be liable. Is that okay? And we shake on it, and we say, it's okay, I'm not going to be liable. So the Mishnah in Bava Metzia says that we're allowed to do that. Or let's go the other way around. A Shomer Chinam, a person who's not a paid bailman, who's paid bailee, is not responsible in the event that the item gets stolen or lost. Not responsible, he's not getting paid for watching the item, so therefore he's not responsible if it gets stolen or lost. What if the Shomer Chinam makes up with the person who deposits the item that he's going to assume the liability for the theft or for loss, despite the fact that the Torah says that he's off the hook? So can he assume that liability? So the Mishnah says, yes, absolutely can assume that liability. Why is it that we can tinker with the monetary laws of the Torah? So the answer is because we hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Kol tanai shebemamon kayim," that whenever there is a condition which is made between two parties to diverge from the laws, the default laws that are established by the Torah, if it's in the monetary realm, you're allowed to diverge from the established default rules that appear in the Torah. So the Ramban says, well, if there's a monetary dispute between two Jews, so that should be in the monetary realm. So then should they not have the ability to stipulate between themselves as a tenai, as a condition, that they're going to agree to adjudicate their dispute in civil court as opposed to Beis Din? Shouldn't they have the opportunity to do that? So the Ramban says, not so fast. Ramban says that we derive two different halachos from the pasuk of Eilu Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifneihem, L'kachama B'kan, Asher Mishpatim Eilu Yasim Otam Lifnei Elohim Yeshayaskir, in front of the Dayanim, V'lo Lifnei Goyim, not in front of civil courts, V'lo Lifnei Mishayinu Shofet Apiya Torah, and we also derive that that you can't bring, you're not supposed to bring the cases in front of individuals who are not learned, who are hedyotos, who are not going to be able to decide according to Torah law. However, he says that there is a difference between the two. Go three lines from the end of the Ramban. Even though both of these things are mentioned, there's a big difference between them. If they want to stipulate that they're going to have somebody who's not so knowledgeable decide the case for them, that's not considered to be a violation of Torah law. That would be a condition with respect to a monetary matter that we're going to allow this unlearned individual decide our case for us. With Kiblu Iluyayu Dino Din, if they accept this individual who is not so learned to adjudicate the case, that would be okay. Aval Lifnei HaGoyim, but to actually appear in front of the civil courts, Asurinheim, Lava Lefanov, Shiodun Lehem B'dineim Li'olam, that is going to be prohibited, even if both parties agree to it. It would be akin to, for example, if I have two parties who enter into a loan transaction, and the lender and the borrower both agree that even though there's a Torah prohibition of ribis, of not collecting usury, they're going to agree between themselves, it'll be okay just between us. Are they allowed to do that? They're not allowed to do that. Why are they not allowed to do that? Isn't this a monetary transaction? And we say, Kol Tanai Shebemamon and Kayim. So the answer is that we only say Kol Tanai Shebemamon Kayim, but we don't say Kol Tanai Shebeisur Kayim. You can't make a condition that goes against a ritual prohibition. And ribis, lending with interest, is considered a ritual prohibition. So the Ramban points out that appearing in front of the secular courts is considered, from the standpoint of halakha, is considered a ritual prohibition. Therefore, even if both parties agree, that would not be permissible, as opposed to if they just agree to allow somebody who's not a certified judge to adjudicate their case, that's not considered to be a ritual prohibition because they're not going in front of the civil courts. As I mentioned before, there is no affirmative obligation that you must resolve your dispute in a Beis Din. You have to have a Beis Din available to be able to resolve disputes. But if parties want to mediate between themselves or go to their next-door neighbor and ask their next-door neighbor, who's a Jewish person, to tell them what they think would be fair and just under the circumstances, that would not be a violation of a ritual prohibition. But you're not allowed to go in front of non-Jews to decide according to their laws. Even if their laws were exactly like our laws, but also inyan. So the question is, why is there such a ritual prohibition? Yes.
It's only talking about a case between two Jews.
Let's say you have a case between a Jew and a non-Jew. So a non-Jew is not obligated to appear before rabbinical courts. The non-Jews are obligated, as one of the Zion mitzvot b'nei Noach, to establish their own court system. That's a dinim. It's one of their seven mitzvot. They have to establish a court system. But they can establish their own court system, and it's perfectly valid and legitimate for them to appear in front of their own court. So if a non-Jew doesn't want to appear before a bezdin, the non-Jew doesn't have to, and the Jew can litigate against the non-Jew in a civil, secular court. Let's say the non-Jew comes along and says, I want to litigate in Bezdin. So does the Jew have the right to say, well, since you could theoretically go to the civil courts, therefore I would prefer, since I think I'm going to get a better recovery in the civil court, I prefer to take you to civil court, even though you want to come to Bezdin. So the Tashbates rules in Chelek Beis Simon Reish Tzadi of the Tshuvas of the Tashbates. He rules that it is in fact incumbent upon the Jewish party in such a case to have the case heard in Bezdin, even with a non-Jewish party. And this relates to the reasons behind the prohibition in general. So let's take a look at the reasons behind the prohibition. There are two. One is stated by Rashi on the Pasuk of Eila Mishpatim. Rashi says, Shehamevi, second line, Shehamevi dinei Yisrael lefnei goyim mechalas Hashem miyakashim avodah zovah l'achshiva. It's considered to be a chilul Hashem. Chil Hashem is clearly a ritual prohibition. You can't have two Jewish individuals make a condition between themselves. We're moichla and chilul Hashem. You can't be moichla and chilul Hashem. Hashem is also a party. And Hashem wasn't moichla on his own kavod. So therefore, chilul Hashem is not something that can be negotiated or something which can be dismissed upon the willingness of both parties. But how is it a chilul Hashem? Rashi explains, because you're glorifying the Avodah Zarah. You're glorifying the idolatrous system of law and saying that you consider it to be functional and better suited to your needs than the divine system of law of Batei Din and Halacha that was established by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the reason that Rashi gives. The reason that the Rambam gives is a little bit different. The Rambam says that what's the problem? The problem is second line of the Rambam here in Hilchos Sanhedrin Perek Chavav, Behevim Yad B'Toras Moshe Rabbeinu. It's considered to be as if you are desecrating the Torah of Moshe. By saying, I'm going to go to another system of law, you are desecrating the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. So you're not desecrating the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu per se if you would be litigating with a non-Jew who's not subject to the laws of the Torah in terms of their monetary transactions. But you are miyakir shem alilim. You would be, and this is, I think, the point of the Tashbates, you would be glorifying their court system if the non-Jew says to you, I'm prepared to come to the Bezdin, and you say, no, I'd rather go to court. So then you're being given an opportunity of Kiddush Hashem by the non-Jew who's willing to go to the Bezdin, and by denying that opportunity for Kiddush Hashem, of glorifying Hashem's name, and instead saying, no, let's go to the civil courts and glorify the civil court, the non-Jewish system instead, so then you are violating Rashi's prohibition of it being miyakir shem elilim, of glorifying the court system of the nations of the world when you had an opportunity to be mekadesh shem shemayim by using the bezdin. So that would explain why the Tashbates would say in such a case, and I've had this case, where parties have come to the bezdin, where a non-Jew has come to the bezdin and wanted to take a Jewish party to the bezdin, and the question that the Jewish party then asks is, am I obligated to come to the bezdin? And the answer is yes, you are obligated in such a case to come to the bezdin. Yes.
What if one of the two parties, let's say they're both Jews, one of the two parties is a total profer, totally not religious? Do you have a chiyuv to push him, and what if he refuses at that point?
So if one of the parties is not religious, you still have, this is a question discussed by the commentary of the Kesef HaKadshim and Siman Chav Vamachosh Mishpat, that's Rabbi Abba Mibuchach. So Rabbi Abba Mibuchach says, what if you know that your Jewish counterpart is going to refuse to come to Bezdin? So then, do you have to bring the person to Bezdin anyway? So the Gemara says elsewhere that if the other party refuses to come to Bezdin, so then you're given a remedy. But the Torah is giving you this remedy, saying if you, in the first instance, were prepared to come to Beis Din, but the other party refused to, so you can throw a wall at him. That's the expression of the Gemara in Baba Kama. And that is interpreted by the Gaonim to mean that in such a circumstance you can take the person to civil court. But that's only because they've refused to come to Beis Din, so it's considered, like the Ksam Sofer explains, as if there is a shlichut, there is a designation that the Beis Din is creating on the part of the civil court to act in its stead, so that it's not a desecration of Hashem's name in that case, because they're considered to be the long arm of the Beis Din. However, it's a very good question, because it also relates to the discussion in the Rosh that emerges from the Rosh that we're about to read, and that's source number 4.
By Rashi, his reasoning, if it's a purely secular democratic system, and it's not tied to Avodah Zarah, does that impact Rashi's reason?
So that's a question. So Tashbetz asked that question as well. So Tashbetz says, what if it's not an Avodah Zarah system? What if it's just a country where you have a separation between religion and state? I've heard of such countries. And where the civil law system really is not predicated upon any kind of religious theology. So do you still have the problem of being miyakir shem elilim? So Tashbetz says that it doesn't really matter whether it is an idolatrous system or just some other kind of secular system, because ultimately you're rejecting the Torah system in favor of another system. This can be explained in one of two ways. Either you can understand it like the Rambam, that even if you're not miyakeh shem elilim, it is a haramas yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu. You are defiling and rejecting and repudiating the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu by accepting a different legal system. So it doesn't matter whether it's a pagan or idolatrous system, you're still rejecting Torah Moshe Rabbeinu. So it's problematic for that reason. But I think that the Tashbetz really is of the opinion that Miyakashem Elilim, Elilim is labdafka. It doesn't just mean Elilim. It means that you're glorifying a different system other than the system of a Torah. And therefore that's included essentially within Elilim. There is a comment made by the Kli Chemda. The Kli Chemda was from Kutna, so Meir Plotsky. He was a Talmud of Rabbi Yeshua Mikutna. And he, in his commentary to Parshas Mishpatim, where he talks about the prohibition of going to the secular courts, he writes in parentheses, which is already kind of a tip-off that maybe something peculiar is going on over here. He writes in parentheses at the very end of his essay, he says, oh, and by the way, all of these prohibitions that I'm discussing, of course, are not relevant to this country where we live. It's only relevant to those places where they still worship idols, such as Japan and China. He mentions them specifically. But here where we live in Europe, of course, we just follow the courts of the land, and just please ignore everything that I've said up until now. So it's generally assumed that that parenthetical comment of the Kli Chemda was inserted in order to satisfy the censors, and was not really meant as sincerely. Nobody else says like that. It's universally agreed upon, like the Tashbetz says, that Miyakeh Shem Elilim is not limited to idolatrous religions, but really to any kind of alternative court system. Yes?
Is there an obligation to try to get non-Jews to come to Beis Din?
No.
Just off the bat?
No, there's no such obligation, because they're not obligated to utilize Bat Din. They're allowed to have their own secular courts. It's considered to be a perfectly legitimate system. Yes.
So a Jewish court system, let's say in Israel, that's not according to Choshen Mishpat, according to Rambam, it's Harei Miyad B'Toras Moshe, but because it's not according to Choshen Mishpat. But according to Rashi, Lifnei V'lo Lifnei Goyim, would that also be considered to be no different than
the court system? So this is the conundrum, because when you have the court system in Israel, everybody is Jewish. How can you call it Lifnei V'lo Lifnei Goyim?
Exactly.
So Chazon Ish says, I can't call it that. I can't call it Lifnei V'lo Lifnei Goyim. So says the Chazon Ish, we'll jump around a little bit. The Chazon Ish is source number 6. It's okay, we could jump a little bit. It's not so far. So says the Chazon Ish like this. He says that, let's say I didn't have proper dayonim who are capable of adjudicating cases. Nowadays in Eretz Yisrael, I would think you probably have enough time in the Kochamim that you could fill the bat they did. It's not really a problem. You have for every single dayonis position that opens up, you have 10,000 applicants. So you certainly have enough qualified people. But let's say you didn't have qualified people, and you have to just appoint individuals who didn't know that much Torah, but they just had good common sense. So he says that that's okay, you could do that. However, what you can't do, What you're not allowed to do is Einam Hashem Lekabel Aleim Kukei Amim Lechokei Kukim. But you're not allowed to accept upon yourselves an alternative legal system. So we understand this very well. Because even if you don't have the issue of Miyakir Shem Malilim, you do have the other issue, which is mentioned by the Rambam, which is your Meirim Yah Negin Toras Moshe Rabbeinu. And that is exactly what the Chazon Ish goes on to say. He says, if they're deciding the case is based on their own common sense, that's considered to be B'chap Shara. That's considered the Torah endorses the idea of compromise, working out an equitable settlement, going the Fnim Mishur Sadin above and beyond the letter of the law. It's not clear that you have left the wellsprings of Torah in order to dig empty ditches. But if everybody's going to accept upon themselves a foreign legal system, even if it's Jews who are judging cases that involve other Jews, and everybody is completely Jewish, so he says that that's considered to be Achilat Torah, and on this it says, Asher tasim lifnehem v'lo lifnei hadyotos. So maybe you wouldn't be able to include this within the part of the din that says v'lo lifnei akum. You have to go in front of the Jewish judges and not in front of non-Jewish judges because here everybody is Jewish, but this would be a violation of going in front of hadyotos of unqualified judges. But here, the obvious question should present itself. Didn't the Ramban say that as far as that part of the prohibition is concerned, of v'lo lifnei hadyotos, that's negotiable? That if you had individuals who decided on their own that they're going to go in front of unqualified judges, that should be okay. So really the Chazon Ish should then say, well, if everybody agrees upon that, then it should be okay, because the Ramban says that that part of the prohibition should be okay. That's not actually what the Chazon Ish goes on to say. It says, it doesn't make a difference whether you go in front of non-Jews, or whether you go in front of the so-called judges in Medina Yisrael, which is exactly what he was talking about. Vod hadavar yote miguna, and if anything, it's considered to be more despicable to shehimiru as mishpatei Torah mishpatei Hevel, that here you have these people who are all Jewish and Jewish citizens of a country who have the capacity to take upon themselves the mishpat haTorah, and instead of taking upon themselves the mishpat haTorah, the Torah legal system, they take upon themselves a foreign legal system. Ve'im yaskimu b'nei ha'ir, and even if everybody would agree upon this, ein baskamasa mamish, their agreement counts for absolutely nothing. And if the people are forced to do it, so then the money that they have to pay based on such court cases would be considered to be gezel. And he goes on to say, Umeirimim Yad B'Torah Moshe Rabbeinu. So this terminology of the Chazon Ish, Umeirimim Yad B'Torah Moshe Rabbeinu, is very deliberate, because the Chazon Ish is explaining why is it that here, even though it's only a violation of Lo Lifnei Hadyotos, why is it not something that could be allowed on a voluntary basis? And that is because there is still a violation of the ritual prohibition. Even if there wouldn't technically be a violation of Miyakir Shem Alilim, because everybody is Jewish, there's still a violation of the explanation that the Rambam has, which is that you're Meirim Yad B'Torah Moshe Rabbeinu. So that aspect of the prohibition continues to be violated, even if you had a Jewish court system. But if it's a Jewish court system which is set up specifically to follow a different foreign legal system other than Torah, so then that is also included in the non-negotiable prohibition that is not subject to a voluntary private contracting between the parties to forego the Torah legal system in favor of a separate legal system. So what a lot of Meforshim struggle with is how to understand a particular passage in the Tshuvos HaRosh. That's source number four. Source number four, the Rosh talks about, what if I have a shtar? I have a contract between two Jewish parties, and the contract itself says I have the choice of law provision. Those who are lawyers know that in all contracts you have like a choice of law provision that says we're going to follow a certain set of laws, like the set of laws in the state of Illinois, and then there's a choice of forum provision. It says that if there's ever a dispute, the dispute shall be adjudicated in any court of competent jurisdiction, in the federal courts or the state courts of the state of Illinois. Illinois. That's the choice of forum provision. So he says, what if you have one of these choice of forum, choice of law provisions that says, Bein b'dinim dinei Yisrael, bein b'dinei ha'umos, that this case can be adjudicated either according to the Jewish law system or can be adjudicated according to the civil law system. So how do you deal with that when this is a contractual provision that presumably is in violation of the Torah? So ve'amarti, so the Rosh seems to be pretty unequivocal in his condemnation of this. He says, Chalila v'chashye v'shus l'mav v'litvol alov v'nei akos of de kochavim. You can't stipulate such a condition in a contract. V'afilim alov v'mav v'omnim v'faneinu, even if they're in front of us. And the v'amah alov v'lamav v'mtirtzit v'beini v'dinei umas, and alov says to l'mav, you know, if you want, it's okay, I'll put in the contract that you can sue me in the civil courts. So even if they did that, makinim v'mav v'min leish lo yitbeinu v'fnei Yisrael, we would stop the mav and tell him that he has no right to do that, right? So he says, so then how do we go down a couple of lines? How do we interpret this clause in the contract? We'll have to explain it in such a way that it won't violate Torah law. This is one of the laws of contract construction that we have in general laws of contracts. If you have a sentence, a provision, the contract that would appear to be in violation of the law, you try whenever possible to construe and interpret it in a way that it won't be violative of the law. So this comes from the Rush. People think this comes from like constitutional law. It comes from the Rush. So the Rush says this. He says, Yesh Lefarsha, we have to explain it in a way that it will not violate the Torah. Yesh Lefarsha, Shlola Akor Divrei Torah, Kigon, it must mean like the case that we mentioned earlier, like a case where you would summon somebody to come to Bezin and they refuse to come to Bezin. So then the halacha is you have a right to take that person to civil court because they've refused to come the best and going, if the person happens to be a strong-armed individual, a defiant individual, and he couldn't care less about the Bat Din, us, and he doesn't give any respect to its jurisdiction, then in order to save you money, you would have the right to take that person to court, but that's when it would be halakhically permissible, and that's how we're going to interpret the provision. Not that you would have the right, that the Malva would have the right to take the Lova to civil court, even when the Lova is screaming, I'm prepared to go to Bezdin, but only when the Lova refuses to go to Bezdin. And look, then you could skip to the end of the Rosh, because this is a principle of contract construction that we interpret in a way that there wouldn't be an Avera. So the Sama of Yeshua Falk, commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, says something absolutely astounding. He says, Umash Mamizeh, very difficult even to figure out, having read the Rosh inside, how he makes this extrapolation or derivation from the words of the Rosh, but this is the Sma. Sma is a pretty important person. Like, he's one of the commentators who appears on the page in Choshen Mishnah. Like, you know, you're going to make it right to the side, like it, not even like in the small print. He's right on the side of the Shulchan Aruch. He really counts. And the Sma says, oh, yeah, Umash Mamizeh, ah, so you know how I understand what the Rosh is saying? I don't understand how he sees the Hainu Daka Koshikasa Stam Shiyadu Medine Umos. That's if I can interpret that the people wrote, oh yeah, we'll have the right to go either to Bezin or to go to the civil courts, and we'll interpret it to mean, yeah, when the halakha permits it. We time the Koshikasa, that's the mean, Loisa Kamnasa Labo Divrei Torah. Because we'll assume the people didn't have in mind to violate the Torah. About what if they wrote explicitly they have in mind to violate the Torah? So he said, oh, that would be okay. If they wrote explicitly that they intend to violate the Torah, oh, sure. That they say, no matter what, I am obligating myself to adjudicate the case in front of the civil court, even if it means that I would get a raw deal. So then, if the Mava would be better off in front of civil court, and even though the Lova is prepared to go to Bezin, then the Lova can't back out, and they have to go in front of the civil court. Because that's considered to be a binding transaction. And he says, I haven't found anybody who would disagree with that. Isn't that obvious? So the Taz says, what are you doing? You're the Sma. You're on the Shulchan Aruch. People are going to be reading this. So the Taz says, Hutamua. This is crazy. How could you have written such a thing? You can't write this. He wrote it, but you can't say this. Are we talking about Rishayim? That we're going to give carte blanche permission for people to just adjudicate their cases in front of the civil courts? That's not how it works. So the Maharshal says something different. So the Maharshal In his commentary, Yamshel Shlomo, this is source Hey. So yeah, so the Maharshal quotes from this rush, this idea of the rush. He says, Bloot, he's talking about the prohibition of going in front of the civil courts. He says, Bloot, afilu kasalo bishtar. Even if they stipulate in the choice of a forum, provision, go in front of any Bezdin. Yeah, the Bezdin of the CRC, the Bezdin of the Aguda, the Bezdin of the Illinois State Court. Yeah, that Bezdin too is okay. He says, you can't do that. You can't go in front of the civil courts without the Rishus Bezdin, even if both parties agree. That he can't do that. And if they don't listen, then it doesn't matter if it's a contractual provision, we will put someone in Chayrim for going to civil court, especially if the other party was prepared to go to Bezdin. So he says a little bit of a combination or of a middle ground between what the Rosh himself had said in interpreting this contractual provision and what the Sma says. He says that Vlomoel had the custom of Bishtar, that which is written in the Shtar does not really have any probative weight, Ella Begava Olim, except for the case we've been discussing, when you're dealing with a recalcitrant personality, a type of person who wouldn't want to go to Bezdin, Shaden Tzayis Ladim. But now he goes a step further. Bangkok, Biyadim, Lukufos Ladim, when you're talking about somebody who you can never compel to go in front of a Bezdin, he's just not going to go, he's not religious, and so forth. Az Yeshlo Vashus Ladim, Rafilo Akal Shagoyim. Now he adds one component. He says, that, however, there'll be one difference if you have a contractual provision. And he says, for this, the contractual provision will actually be helpful. Normally, if there's a dispute between two Jewish parties, so the party who is the plaintiff has to first try to take the defendant to Bezdin, and only when the defendant refuses to go to Bezdin does the Bezdin have to give reshus, give explicit permission for the plaintiff to take the case to civil court. It says, if, however, you have a defendant party, a potential defendant party, who himself was prepared, and even insisted, perhaps, on entering into a contract that says that everything is going to be adjudicated in civil court, so then you know what you're dealing with. You're dealing with an individual who has stated up front that they are refusing to come to Bezdin, and in such a case, you don't even have to summon the person to Bezdin first and get Bezdin's permission to take this person to civil court to be like an agent of the Bezdin, because by virtue of the fact that it appears in the contract, the person is stating up front that they are broadcasting the fact that they would never go to Bezdin, and therefore you can take this person to civil court straight, even without any explicit permission from the Bezdin. Belovishus Diane Otuve Yair to the Inyan Zed Levad Moil. For this purpose alone, this contractual provision will help. Veino Ovel Divrei Torah, and you will not be considered, the plaintiff will not be considered to be in violation of Divrei Torah. Afilu Lokasa Bishtar, he says, and the truth of the matter is, I'm dealing with a recalcitrant person, like a strong-armed individual who doesn't respect Bezdin, then Hechadika Olam, if he's one of these type of defiant personalities, you'd be allowed to take him to civil court anyway, but the difference would be that if you didn't have a contractual provision, you'd have to first go to Bezdin. And now you save yourself that step. So this teaches us something very, very interesting, which is that the violation is in the totsah and not in the ketzitza. What do I mean by that? If I'm dealing with a ribbis transaction, for example, where Reuven loans Shimon $100 and stipulates that you'll pay me back $120. So it's clearly a violation in the totsah, when the result, when Shimon pays Reuven back $120, that's a violation of ribbis. But there's also a violation of ribbis in the ketzitza, in the stipulation, with the mere fact that they sign a contract, according to most poskim, the mere fact that they sign the contract itself that says that Shimon agrees that he's going to pay Reuven $120 in return for a $100 loan, even though he hasn't paid a penny yet to Reuven, there's a violation at that moment in time that they have done their ketzitza, in which they have made the stipulation. So the chiddush of the Maharshal is, there's no real violation at the time of the ketzitza when it comes to a choice of a forum provision to sign a contract which says that in the event of a dispute, the parties are going to go to civil court. It may not be enforceable in the sense that we'll say that if Reuven and Shimon sign such a contract, and then Shimon says afterwards, I know I signed it, but I want to go to Bezdin, then Reuven doesn't have the right to take Shimon to civil court afterwards. However, it is considered to be meaningful either in terms of interpreting it like the Rosh says that it means that in the event that one party will be recalcitrant, then Reuven will, if Shimon will be recalcitrant, Reuven will have the right to take him to civil court. And also it means that, if Shimon had insisted upon such a provision, Reuven does not have to, he does not have to walk away from the deal, rather than sign such a contractual provision. He's allowed to sign the contractual provision because Reuven's not doing any violation. He still has in his mind, in the event Shimon comes around and he becomes a Baal Tshuva and he recognizes that he's supposed to go to Beis Din, then of course it will adjudicate the case in Beis Din. All this means is that since right now he hasn't come to that point and he doesn't recognize the importance of going to Beis Din, I will retain the right up front of being able to take him to civil court. So this actually relates to a couple of the case scenarios that have come to me at the Beis Din. So look at number one, case scenario number one. Reuven, a Jewish business owner, enters into a lucrative contract with a major supplier, Stephen, who is also Jewish, clearly not observant, that's why he doesn't have a Hebrew name, but the other party insists on putting into their contract that in the event of a dispute, the matter will be litigated in the secular court. So Stephen says, you want me to enter into this contract with you? So I insist on a certain contract. My lawyers are drawing up the contract, and it's very important to me that I have this choice of forum provision that says that if we ever have a dispute, it will be adjudicated by the Illinois State Court. So I had a similar case where Reuven, in that case scenario, called me up at the Beis Din and asked me, am I allowed to sign such a contract? Which I said, based on the Maharshal and the Rosh, you're allowed to sign such a contract. It doesn't give you the right to go to civil court if Stephen becomes a Baal Tshuva. However, right now, you are allowed to sign the contract because you haven't violated any prohibition. And it just means that if Stephen remains the same in his general recalcitrance towards Baal Tshuva, then you'll have the right, according to the Maharshal, to take him straight to the civil court. Not because you have the right to violate the halacha, but because the halacha is that if the other party refuses to go to Beis Din, then you have the right under those circumstances to take the person to civil court. Okay?
Presumably, Stephen, there's no kabbalah's opinion in this contract. So the contract in halacha is unenforceable. So...
No, let's assume there's a Kabbalah's Kinyan. We'll assume there's a Kabbalah's Kinyan. And by the way, even if there wouldn't be a Kabbalah's Kinyan, in the event that the agreement that they sign is considered to be a binding agreement according to secular law, that itself is considered to be an enforceable Kinyan from the standpoint of halakha, because that's called Situmta. So as long as in general society this is considered to be binding, it becomes binding by definition as a matter of halakha. So therefore, it would certainly be binding based on those principles. Now, the next question is, what if we're dealing with a situation where the party is sort of Jewish but not completely Jewish, in the sense that the actual party who is listed in the case is a Jewish party, but the real party in interest is not a Jewish party. And the real party in interest is not going to go to Beis Din because what kind of case am I talking about? Insurance claims. This comes up all the time, where there's a medical malpractice claim. Somebody was harmed by a Jewish doctor, and they want to go after the insurance carrier, but the insurance carrier is not going to pay for a judgment that's rendered in Beis Din. So therefore, the plaintiff, the patient, wants to be able to sue in civil court. But when they sue in civil court, it's not going to say Reuven versus insurance carrier. It's going to say Reuven versus Shimon. So is that a violation? Is that considered to be a miyakir shei malilim? Is that considered to be that it looks like two Jewish parties are fundamentally agreeing to go to civil court adjudication? So here, the poskim discuss this. This is very much a modern-day scenario, and it really depends on who is considered to be the party in the litigation. What is the role that the insurance company plays, and does everybody understand the role that the insurance company plays? So the role that the insurance company plays, when you think about it, is that it's really a guarantor for a person's obligations. So in halacha, if you have what's called an Arev Kablon, you have a guarantor where the plaintiff has the right to go either after the party, the direct party, or to go after the guarantor, so then the guarantor is called an Arev Kablon. They're called an Arev Kaplan, and the plaintiff has the right to go either after the debtor, or the liable party, or the guarantor, the Arev Kaplan. So since the Arev Kaplan can be made into a party by the plaintiff, right, therefore the plaintiff plaintiff has the right, if it's a non-Jewish party, to go directly to secular court. But what if Arif Kaplan, in this case the insurance company, says, I want to go to Beis Din. I'm perfectly happy going to Beis Din because I think that there'll be less of a recovery that will be rendered by the Jewish law judges than there would be by the jury in the civil court. So then we go back to the Tashbeit. So then according to the Tashbeit, we would have to say that in such a case, there is no justification for taking the insurance company to a civil court because the insurance company has agreed to abide by the rules of Beis Din, even though the recovery in Beis Din might actually end up being less than what the recovery would be in a civil court if you had a jury trial. So that would be a very interesting situation. I once had a situation like that at the Beis Din where the doctor was being sued and the doctor said, I want the case adjudicated in Beis Din. And the plaintiff, who was the Jewish party, who felt that they had been harmed and injured by the doctor, everybody was from here, said, I want to go to civil court because I'll get a bigger recovery in civil court. And the plaintiff said, in any way, I'm really going after the insurance company, and the insurance company will only hold itself accountable in civil court. Then the doctor got the insurance company to come to the Beis Din and say, no, we don't mind coming to Beis Din. We're happy to go to Beis Din. So that really, you know, raised some very, very interesting issues. I would say my own personal feeling in that case is that based on the Tashbeit, the case should really be heard in Beis Din as opposed to civil court. But let's say it's the other way around. Let's say that the plaintiff wants to go to Beis Din, and the defendant says, no, I'm covered by an insurance carrier, so I insist that the case be heard in civil court instead. So what did I say the halakha was? The halakha is, this is a gemara at the end of Baba Basra, that a plaintiff has the right to go either after the defendant or after the kabbalah, after the arev, after the guarantor. So he gets that choice. So the plaintiff says, it's okay, I'll forego the insurance. I just want to go after you. So you won't be, you know, so you won't have the benefit of insurance, and maybe I won't get as big a recovery, but I'd rather take you to Beis Din, and I'll leave the insurance company out of it. So the halakha then would be, the plaintiff has the right to say that, and the defendant can't insist that the case will be removed to civil court, unless, there's an unless. What's the unless? Is that there's another kind of arev that's called, anybody know? An arev shluftutz. It's an arev shluftutz, which means that if the parties both agree at the outset of the transaction, everybody knows that the deal is that the plaintiff will only be able to recover from the guarantor, that the nature of the relationship is that you always recover only from the guarantor, not from anybody else. So then the defendant has the right to insist, go after the guarantor, don't go after me. So in most medical malpractice cases, we are dealing with really the equivalent of arev shluftutz. Everybody knows you go to a doctor that if you're looking for recovery because the doctor ends up harming you, that you only go after the insurance company. That's why all the doctors have medical malpractice. That's sort of understood up front. That's why the doctors pay a fortune in medical malpractice, because that's who you go after. The same thing with car insurance and automobile accidents, that everybody knows that you, especially with major automobile accidents, everybody knows that you only go after the insurance company. So then we would say the defendant does have the right to say, go after the arev. If the arev will only hear the case in civil court, you have to go to civil court, because this is an arev shluftutz, a type of situation. But we have sometimes these newfangled insurance situations which are much trickier than that, where, for example, you have a Rebbe who teaches in a school, and the school decides that Rebbe's been around for enough years, they're losing their luster, and the students don't have an interest anymore in the Rebbe's old-fashioned style, so we'll get rid of the Rebbe. And the Rebbe says that I was wrongfully terminated. And anyway, I want my severance. I want my Chodesh Lashana. I want a month for every single year that I worked. Chodesh Lashana is a concept that only exists, if it exists at all, in Jewish law. But there is no Chodesh Lashana concept in secular law. In Israeli law, there's a Chodesh Lashana concept that's codified in Israeli statutes. But in secular law, there's no such thing. If there was no severance that was stipulated in the contract between the parties, the person's not going to get any severance. But the school obtained insurance. They obtained labor insurance or employee insurance where the insurance covers them for any claims which are raised in a labor context, in which any employees would raise any claims against the school, so it's going to be covered by insurance. But the school says, we're covered by insurance, but our insurance carrier will only represent us in civil court. Otherwise, they're not going to pay for us. And the plaintiff says, I don't want to go to, the Rebbe says, I don't want to go to civil court. I'm a Rebbe, first of all. Secondly, I don't want to go to civil court because they never heard of Kodesh Lashon. They're not going to give me anything in civil court. It's very nice that your insurance carrier will cover you in civil court, but the judge or the jury will give me garnished. So what good is the insurance carrier as far as I'm concerned? I only want to go to Bezalel. I'm going to have a real claim of Kodesh Lashon. So do we say that in this case, the defendant, the school, and I've had this a couple of times already, that the defendant, the school, has the right to say, no, they have to take us to civil court because we're covered by insurance, just like in the case of the medical malpractice and the automobile cases. So the answer is, this is not Arv Shluftutz, because there is no automatic understanding, generally speaking, in our community, when Rebbeim and schools enter into contracts, that there is an understanding up front that any recovery will only be against insurance carriers. It doesn't work like with doctors. The general assumption is that there'll be recovery directly against the school, unless it's stipulated up front when they enter into the contract that it should be understood that if there's ever a dispute, recovery will only be against the insurance carrier. So if that's stipulated in the contract, so then they stipulate it to an Arv Shluftutz situation. But otherwise, that situation that does not exist, in which case the plaintiff has the right to go after the party directly in Bezdin. So that's how these different scenarios would potentially play out. Now, what if the parties say that we are prepared to go to Bezdin? However, we would like Bezdin to decide the case according to secular law. What if you worked it that way? The Bezdin is not, we're not talking about the Batei Mishpat in Israel that the Chazon Ish was railing about, where they accepted a foreign system upon themselves, but in an individual transaction, the parties say that we are comfortable with a secular law, we entered into a real estate transaction, and we want secular law to govern our relationship because we operate in accordance with the mores and the customs of the contemporary commercial marketplace. Would that be considered to be permissible? So this is an entire brouhaha among the poskim as well. This is also a machlokas, it appears, between the Sma and the Taz. But here, there's much more grounds to say that this is not a miyakir shei malilim in the sense that the parties are still going in front of the actual Bezdin, and they're not being meirim yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu because they're not asking the Bezdin to just torpedo all of Torah law. They're saying that in our particular transaction, we have a comfort level. Where do we find some sort of a precedent or discussion for this? We find this in Rabbi Akiva Eger, I don't have this in the materials, has a comment in the beginning, in his commentary at the beginning of Kosher Mishpah, where Rabbi Akiva Eger talks about the following situation. You have like two diamond merchants who have a dispute with each other, and Reuven and Shimon, and Reuven wants to take Shimon to the Bezdin, and Shimon says, we're diamond merchants. The diamond merchants, we have like an arbitration board, and the arbitration board decides things in accordance with the Minag HaSokhim, in accordance with whatever is the custom of the merchants. So does Reuven have the right to insist that Shimon has to go to the Bezdin, or can Shimon say, I'll go in front of the arbitration board? So Rabbi Akiva Eger quotes a Maharshach, who says that since this is the Minag HaSokhim, this is just the minig in the marketplace that they always go in front of this arbitration board. It's not Arkos. It's not a civil court. It's just an arbitration panel that they're deciding according to their yosher, their principles of equity and fairness, and this is what everybody does. So it says of the Maharshach, in such a case, there would be a requirement on the part of Reuven to litigate his case in front of the arbitration board. So we see that there isn't necessarily a need across the board to decide cases in accordance with our principles, as long as there isn't a separate legal system which is being brought in that would be controlling in the case. What if this arbitration board was under the aegis of the court system? Where do you have such a thing where you have arbitration under the aegis of the court system? You have that with small claims courts. So sometimes we'll have a person call up and say, listen, I have a small claim against somebody, $3,000, we had a contract, the person was a car mechanic, and the person messed up my car, didn't do the repairs properly. I only have a claim about $3,000, not like $1 million claim. I mean, it's money, but it's still within the ambit of what would be covered in small claims court. They'll have an arbitrator appointed over there. It's not going to be decided according to secular law. It'll be decided according to whatever the arbitrator thinks is fair. So is that a violation of our cause? So Rabbi J. David Bleich and others say, this is a violation of our cause. Why? because the small claims court is not operating like in somebody's living room. It's operating as part of the court system. When you, and this is actually spelled out meforish explicitly in Choshen Mishpat Simen Samaches, which says explicitly that pshara b'fnei akum is no good, because that is considered. It's not meirim yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu per se, because the case is not being decided according to secular legal principles, but it is miyakashe melilim, because you are subscribing to the secular court system by using their small claims court. I remember I was once taken to small claims court. I had to go because I was the defendant. I wasn't in violation. It wasn't me personally. The Bezdin issued a decision in a case, and it was a get case. And the husband, we had the husband give a get, and then we decided the monetary aspects of the case, and the husband didn't like the way that we decided the monetary aspects of the case, and he took the Bezdin to small claims court for a refund of the application fee that he paid to open up the file in the Bezdin in the first place. Said, I didn't get what I paid for. I didn't like the decision. I think the decision was wrong, and therefore I should get my money back. So we went. So I had to go to small claims court. So because he was only asking for $500, something like that, whatever he was asking for. So the arbitrator in the case, we sat down in front of an arbitrator, and the arbitrator turned to me, and he said, listen, why don't we just split the difference? You know, he says this, you say that, we'll just split it 50-50. So I said, you know, that's very Solomonic of you, but I have to be worried about the principle and the precedent over here. We are a rabbinical court, and it's very important that people respect our decisions. We don't want to set a precedent where anybody who's not happy with the decision can just take us to court, and we'll give them some money. So I'm sorry, I just can't agree to pay anything. Then I waited a couple of days for a decision, and Baruch Hashem, the arbitrator ruled completely in our favor. Shalom al Yisrael. It was very, very interesting because the fellow, when he was walking out of the small claims court with me, so he turned to me and he said he thought he was going to win. And he said, this is just the beginning. What I plan to do is that if the arbitrator should grant me the refund of my money, I'll use that as proof that it must be that the entire decision of the Bezdin was no good. And then I'll go to a regular court in order to overturn the Bezdin's decision. So he had the whole thing all planned out, but the arbitrator foiled his plans. Kadosh Baruch Hu foiled his plans. So that's small claims court. So therefore, small claims court would still be a violation of the Yisr of Arkos. However, what if you have something which is an amalgam? So Tzitz Eliezer has a very interesting case. The Rabbi Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg wrote the Tzitz Eliezer in Eretz Yisrael. So apparently in Israel, in each the condominium association, whatever the equivalent term is in Israel, they had a rule where there was somebody appointed, a pakid, somebody who was an official magistrate of every single condominium association. If there would be any dispute between neighbors, they would have to go to that pakid to decide, according to his judgment, how the dispute should be settled. So the question was whether this was a violation of our ka'os, this is part of the Israeli governmental court system, that this arbitration was arranged, or do we say that this is just considered to be mutter because it's not officially in the courts and the pakid is deciding according to principles of equity and fairness as opposed to any structured foreign legal system. Tzitz Eliezer thought that this fit within the Rabbi Akiva Eger exception, that this would be okay. So others asked on the Tzitz Eliezer afterwards, how in the world could he have Paskid that way when the pakid, the appointment of the pakid, was part of the court system in Israel. Even though they're not working within the courts, why did the Tzitz Eliezer think that that's okay? So that's Akasha, why the Tzitz Eliezer thought that was okay. It could be that Tzitz Eliezer figured that here I have Tarti Lutibusa. I have two things that are good. Number one, it's in front of somebody who's Jewish. And number two, he's not deciding according to this Kukim Beduyim, a foreign legal system that was accepted by the Israeli courts. But rather, he's deciding in accordance with principles of equity and fairness. So maybe the fact that it was in Eretz Yisrael and the person is not following the official legal system in Israel made the Tzitz Eliezer more comfortable with this particular scenario. It wouldn't necessarily be as comfortable if this was part of, say, an American legal system that would appoint such arbitrators. So that's sort of an interesting Yotzei Dolphin, kind of out-of-the-box type of case. So the last scenario in the 5 minutes that we have left that we'll just discuss briefly is the scenario of what if the parties then go in front of a Bezdin and they say, we want the Bezdin to decide our case in accordance with a civil court. So what's very interesting over here is, do we say that this is more within the ambit of Tanai Shebamamun Kayim? that here they're not violating the ritual prohibition of going in front of the civil courts. They're not going in front of a Jewish court that is bound by a separate system of laws. They're going in front of a Bezin and saying, we want this particular case adjudicated according to Tola. Where does this come up? This comes up in prenuptial agreements, where you have a couple that gets married, and they sign an agreement that if we ever have a dispute, then we agree that the dispute shall go in front of the Bezin. And the wife turns to the husband and says, I'll sign this thing to go in front of the Bezdin because I love you very much and we haven't, you know, gotten divorced yet. But I am not so comfortable with having all of our monetary affairs distributed according to halakha. I think halakha says something about all of my money is your money. And I would rather have the monetary resolution conducted according to principles of secular law. So this was a major issue when the Rabbinical Council of America prenuptial agreement was being drafted. And Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg from Eretz Yisrael, Big Posek in Eretz Yisrael, recommended that the parties be given an option that the Bezdin will decide the case in accordance with principles of secular law. So that the wife would be more comfortable signing the agreement. Rav Tzvi Gartner, another major rabbinic personality in Eretz Yisrael, said to Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, what are you doing? Isn't this a violation because the Bezdin would then be adjudicating according to principles of a civil law? Yes?
Can't this be just a form of pshara? They're saying, give us a pshara within this framework?
If they would say, decide according to whatever principles you think are just and fair and correct, that's one thing. But if they say explicitly, we want you, Bedavka, to decide according to principles of a secular law, so that could potentially be more problematic. Like, for example, the Meiri, in his commentary to Maseches Sanhedrin, talks about the concept of Arkol Shebisurya. What's Arkol Shebisurya? Those were courts made up of Jewish judges that were appointed in communities where they weren't Torah learned scholars. And the Rashba says the Gemara talks about how you can have like these individuals who are not necessarily so learned, but they're the ones to decide cases. And the Rashba says this is talking about when you have communities where you don't have Torah scholars, so then you appoint people to just decide according to whatever they think is fair and just. But they're not deciding according to a foreign legal system. So the Meiri says, so how are they going to make their decisions? Based on what? So he says, well, they'll take everything into account. They'll take fairness into account. They'll take pshara into account. Yeah, and they'll look at chukim and nimusim. And they'll look at, you know, laws and statutes. Judge Menachem Elon from Israel, who was the founder of the Mishpat Yevi movement, who also was a judge in the Israeli Supreme Court, and Rabbi Shlomo Gorin, who is a very prominent rabbinic personality in Israel, who is the Rav of Tzahal and chief rabbi. So Rabbi Shlomo Gorin also, together with Alon, they both made the same argument, saying, well, look, the Meiri says, you can appoint Jewish judges to decide according to Chukim Mini Muslim. So the answer that everybody gave was essentially the same answer, which I think is the correct answer. The Meiri didn't say they have to decide according to principles of other legal systems. It says they could take into account whatever they know. So they could take into account with the principles of fairness, the principles of equity, and they happened to see something that was written in a different legal code that they liked, so they could use that as well if they want to, but they're not bound to use it. So it's very, very different when you are binding the judges to decide only in accordance with secular law. So maybe that's going to be more problematic. So there's a very, very interesting and important comment which is made over here by the Dalchei Moshe, by the Rama. Oh, I think we have to stop. Okay, so let's pick up next time, Yetz Hashem, on this particular issue, and we'll continue going through the case scenarios. Okay. Okay, we'll continue. What? I don't need that.
Nachman spoke with the yeshiva here, and he sent me that comment. I think I had recorded. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Where he said, yeah, but we're Jewish judges. The problem is our coast, and we're Jewish.
He tried to make it work, but the mice didn't really work.
It's based on the Jewish law. Yeah. It's not even
totally
the
next week also.
It's
based like a combination of British law and Ottoman law. Yeah, right.
It's not that they created the new Jewish law. Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.